I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. As Puerto Rico's economy continues to deteriorate, more and more Puerto Ricans are choosing to call Central Florida home. When they get here, they need to find work, enroll their kids in school, and find places to live, all while navigating a language that isn't their strength. Groups that serve the Puerto Rican community are stepping up to answer the need. This weekend, there was a welcome and orientation event in Orlando. 90.7's Crystal Chavez was there and joins us to tell us more. Crystal, welcome to Intersection.
Hi, Matt.
Who were some of the people you met at this orientation for Puerto Rican newcomers?
One of the first people I met was 44-year-old Wilfredo Rodriguez. He's been here 3 months. Like so many others, he left because of the bad economy. His wife worked at a private hospital in Puerto Rico, and she'd been notified that they were going to cut her benefits. Rodriguez wasn't working because he'd been laid off. When they left, he was studying engineering. Here he is saying, I told her, let's go. They sold everything. They have a house left, but they took off with nothing, nothing at all, and they have two kids. They have a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old. Rodriguez had visited Orlando because his daughter plays volleyball with a league that has games here. On one visit, he stayed a bit longer to scout things out. Now his children are enrolled in school here. He says they like it. Rodriguez says he's found work in Kissimmee. Here's Rodriguez with more on why his family chose Orlando. He says Orlando because it's the city he knows and the climate. They're tropical. He says he tried out Arizona for a year and it's above 100 degrees all the time there. He never got used to the temperature. Over here, the climate's more tropical and that's why they chose Orlando first. He says he knows a little English, and he's practicing to improve it for their new life here.
So, Crystal, Rodriguez and his family have been here a few months. Who else did you talk to?
Bercida Sanchez. She's only been here a week. She worked with the government of Puerto Rico's EMS system. She says taxes were too high and utility bills kept going up, but not her salary. She worked for 13 years in Puerto Rico and says she has nothing to show for it. Sanchez has an interview lined up for a health-related job in Orlando. She still needs to get her driver's license. But more than employment, she says she moved here for her 18-year-old daughter who has cerebral palsy and doesn't walk. She said in Puerto Rico, there was no help for her daughter. She said here, there's opportunity, physical therapy, medical services, medical equipment, wheelchairs, beds, all that. She said, here, people help. Over there, not so much. And over there, she said her daughter was completely forgotten. Sanchez registered to vote at this event. She says she's just starting to familiarize herself with our elections. She's proud to be Puerto Rican, but was tired of the crime on the island and didn't feel safe. Over there, she says you have to secure your windows. Sanchez is living with an aunt here in Central Florida. It's very common for people to stay with family and friends while they get their ducks in a row.
All right, so did everyone you speak to leave Puerto Rico because of the economy?
No, one man I spoke to appeared to have had a stable life over there and still chose to come. 41-year-old John Luque and his wife have been here a month. They're newlyweds, no kids, beautiful couple. Luque had a government job and a house over there. But he says they're looking for a better quality of life, new horizons. They just wanted to see what opportunities there are outside of the island. Luque says he likes change and he'd been at his job for 15 years and there wasn't any more room for career growth.
So, Crystal, these newcomers, Wilfredo Rodriguez, Bercida Sanchez, Juan Luque, they're all looking for work and an opportunity and they're speaking Spanish. I'm wondering what impact that will have. Do they know English?
I asked everyone I spoke to that question. Luque says his English is so-so. He laughed about it and said he can order food, the basics. Here he is explaining why his English isn't proficient. He says in the public schools and college, there are classes specifically for English, but the young aren't that interested because everything is in Spanish. TV, radio, all of the public on the island speak Spanish. You're at work, that's what everyone speaks. He says English just isn't that necessary. But when you grow up and get to this country, he says you understand just how necessary it is. There was one group people were really happy to find there at this event called Fluente. Cynthia Lopez is a coach with the program, which provides classes where people can practice their conversation in English and Spanish without having to worry about the level they're at or if they think they sound funny. Lopez says a lot of times Puerto Ricans understand English, the comprehension is there, but there's a barrier to speaking it out loud. That has to do with confidence and practice. She says one of Fluente's other goals is to bridge communities.
A lot of times you know, you have a neighbor next door and they, you know, they have Hispanic people living next door to them, but, you know, they like our food, but they really don't talk to us. And we get, you know, a lot of Hispanic people, they get choked up when they're speaking because they have an accent. And the two never come together in an environment where they can learn.
Lopez is excited about part of the program that prepares people for how to answer questions in a job interview. On the flip side, she says Fluente also welcomes Latinos who may be second or third generation here who just want to brush up on their Spanish because they never get to use it. The Fluente program kicked off with a test model in Kissimmee and is now branching off to downtown Orlando. Classes start in January.
So was the event full of newcomers from the island, or were other groups there too?
There weren't just newcomers. I also spoke to Puerto Ricans who've lived in Central Florida for decades. Carmen Colon was born in Puerto Rico and has been here 32 years. She says she didn't come here for economic reasons. For her, it was more of a whim. As we heard earlier, Colon is like many of her peers in being more comfortable speaking Spanish, even though she's lived here for decades.
Me cansé de estar allá y dije...
She says she got tired of being there and she thought she'd come here with her second family in Orlando. When she got here, she said she encountered horrible discrimination and found out about suffering within the Puerto Rican community and abuses. So that motivated her to take to the streets to register Puerto Ricans. And she said that was the way to get people to respect her race, people, and culture. Colon says when she first got here more than 30 years ago, she experienced and saw discrimination in the school system and with police. She says the way to gain respect is for Puerto Ricans to show their power at the ballot box. She says lots of progress has been made, but there's more work to do. She's proud to see the work a new generation of Puerto Rican community leaders is doing.
Speaking of the ballot box, Crystal Chavez, what does she think about the presidential race?
When it comes to U.S. politics, she doesn't like any of the Republican candidates for president. I asked her about the Florida candidates, and she said Puerto Ricans aren't going to vote for Marco Rubio just because he's Latino. Colon votes Democratic because she thinks that party's more inclined to help Puerto Rico, whereas more of the new arrivals I spoke to seemed more independent. Many of the newcomers are still familiarizing themselves with the presidential candidates and learning about all of their positions.
So what's being done to mobilize the Puerto Rican vote?
There's a very active group called Mi Familia Vota, and they were at this welcome event registering people to vote. Jamie Ramirez is with the group. She came from Puerto Rico 3 years ago and currently works merchandise at Disney's Hollywood Studios. Ramirez has talked to a lot of potential voters, so I asked her if she sees new Puerto Ricans leaning Republican or Democrat. Ramirez started talking to me in English, and then when she couldn't find the right words, she too switched to Spanish. Here's what she said. She says, I'm seeing people who aren't affiliated with any political party. They don't want to say who they're going to vote for. They're just watching the news, learning about who's going to be their candidate.
So, Crystal Chavez, there was a focus on civic involvement and language. What else did you find at this event?
There was also a health component. There were people signing up folks for Obamacare. There were vision checks, even a massage station. I should mention, while the event focused on Puerto Ricans, it was open to all Latinos. I spoke to Josephine Mercado, founder of Hispanic Health Initiatives. It's a 15-year-old grassroots organization that does community health education. They screen people for diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and more. Mercado calls herself a New Yorican, a Puerto Rican born and raised in New York City. She came to Florida to semi-retire, but says her work with this health initiative has kept her busy.
A lot of people, and that's not only the Hispanic community, are totally unaware of the important role that healthy nutrition and exercise plays in preventing or controlling that disease. So we train our community health workers, who are volunteers, to teach the community. We go into the churches, we go into community centers, we go to community civic groups, and we talk to them about healthy nutrition and exercise.
Nutrition and exercise, good advice for all of us. Crystal Chavez, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. Still to come, journalist Maria Padilla calls the influx of Puerto Ricans to Central Florida historic, and she says this wave of migrants isn't going to stop anytime soon. So what's the impact on the economy here, and what can the diaspora do to help the island of Puerto Rico? Intersection returns in a minute. Welcome back to Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. The Great Migration from Puerto Rico to the United States took place in the middle of the 20th century, with Puerto Ricans moving to the Northeast, particularly New York. Maria Padilla, who's been reporting on Latino issues in Central Florida for more than a decade, says this new wave of Puerto Ricans leaving the debt-ridden island is historic. Maria Padilla is founder and editor of Orlando Latino. It's a blog about Central Florida's Latino community. She's also a former editor of La Prensa and El Sentinel. Maria, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Walk me through what's going on here as far as what's happening in Puerto Rico and how that's impacting what's going on here in Central Florida.
Well, what's happening on the island is that they're going through a fiscal crisis that they've never actually seen before or experienced before, which is to say they are burdened by $70 billion plus dollars in debt, bond debt, and the governor came out about June and said that the island could not pay that back. It's quite a bit of money. Mm-hmm. And so all of that debt and the payments that have to be made on it are having a big impact on the government in terms of how you operate government operations, workers, and so on and so forth, and the trickle-down effect that that has on the private sector as well. And so folks are leaving, and they're coming to places like Central Florida. Florida is the number one sort of relocation spot for mm-hmm. Puerto Ricans leaving the island, and also Puerto Ricans leaving other states.
Is Central Florida being a destination for Puerto Ricans, is that a fairly new phenomenon?
Yes and no. It's not new in the sense that it's been happening for more than a decade. For instance, back in the year 2000, when I was with the Orlando Sentinel, we saw that right away in the census numbers that came out that year, that there was quite a bit of influx of Puerto Ricans coming from both the island and the states. And that was when we decided a year later to launch El Sentinel, the mm-hmm. Spanish language paper. But the influx into Florida from Puerto Rico has been going on for decades. It's just not been as large as it is right now. If you go back to the late 70s, for instance, that would be when the first Puerto Ricans, if you want to call it that, came into Central Florida, normally trickling up from South Florida, actually. Mm-hmm. And the migration has had several different, had been defined differently in different decades. In the early part of, in the middle, let's say, part of the 20th century, it was more well-to-do who came here for business purposes. They had businesses in South Florida and so forth. Now we're talking about more of a working class and mm-hmm. a middle class migration.
Where are they settling when they get to Central Florida? What's destination number one for Puerto Ricans coming here?
Actually, the number one destination appears to be Osceola County. At least that's where you have the highest concentration of Puerto Ricans. For instance, I was looking at some numbers before I came here, and 60% or about 60% of the population, of the Hispanic population in Osceola County, is Puerto Rican already. In Orange County, the figure is probably about 55%. Of the Hispanic population, 50% is Puerto Rican. So you're seeing very heavy concentrations. In the Tri-County area, you're looking at about 302,000 Puerto Ricans already in mm-hmm. Osceola, Orange, and Seminole. The majority are in Orange County, but Orange County is a big county, a lot of population, so the percentage looks a little smaller. But it's quite a bit of people. It's almost 175,000 Puerto Ricans in Orange County.
The Puerto Ricans coming from the island are coming here for a better opportunity. But what about from other states? What's the motivation from people coming from up north?
Well, actually, it's quite similar. Because if you look at the historic migration, Puerto Rico, first of all, has been an island that's had a series of migrations throughout the 20th century when the United States first took over the island in 1898. And what used to be called the Great Migration, for instance, was my parents' migration mm-hmm. from the island to places like the Northeast, particularly New York City, which is where my parents settled at separate times because they met in New York. And that was different. There was a manufacturing center in New York and in all the East Coast, Philadelphia, all the way up to New Jersey and going on up. And so there were manufacturing jobs to be had and to be filled. So they went after that. Beginning about the 70s or so, manufacturers started to leave the East Coast, and that became very hard on the Puerto Rican population. And so what happened is that folks start looking elsewhere, which is what happens. Well, if I don't have a job here, where can I go? And that's when you start hearing stories and you start seeing advertising for plots of land in Central Florida or housing that is pretty affordable relative to the East Coast. And folks start coming down here. So you have people coming to Central Florida from Puerto Rico, the island, and you have Puerto Ricans coming to Central Florida from the Northeast state. New York, for instance, is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, sending state. And at that point, you're looking at people who are already pretty much retired or about to retire or are looking for different, you know, horizon.
The weather, too, I imagine, would factor into it?
Yes, the weather factors into it. And as you know, once you have a migration, you have the word of mouth. Mm-hmm. So now when you come to Central Florida, you are very likely to maybe know somebody here already or perhaps have family members here already. And that makes a big difference rather than to go cold and not know anyone at all. That's always been a part of the migration as well. In New York, for instance, Puerto Ricans would form these clubs from their hometowns. My parents, for instance, belonged to a club from Cabo Rojo, which is the southwestern part of the island that they were from. Puerto Rico is small enough, so now you're looking at towns. That gets to get, you know, be very interesting. But you have a little bit more camaraderie going on here, more people who are like you.
When you talk about Puerto Rico, the island being a small place, is it like, you know, everybody knows somebody who knows somebody else? Is it that kind of community?
Well, what's happened now is that I've lived in Puerto Rico at two different times in my life. My daughter was actually born on the island and I was married there. In the early days, you know, decades ago, you didn't necessarily know someone who had migrated to the island or who was a family member who was here. But the migration has become of such great proportion now that you could say that almost everybody has a relative, a neighbor, somebody they know close. I mean, not even far off relative or distant relative who is here, mm-hmm. who is either in Central Florida or in the States. The migration that we're seeing now out of Puerto Rico is of historic proportions. It's even greater than the migration that my parents were a part of, which is saying a lot because that was the Great Migration. So it's also very sad on one side because it means that people are leaving the island, and for the most part, people don't really want to leave the island. They would kind of want to stay there, but they're leaving for economic reasons. They're economic migrants. And also, I'm glad, you know, on the other hand, because it also means that folks are not taking this line down. They're going to get up, they're going to move, they're going to find some place where they can use their skills, their talent, or gain new skills and talent. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing as well. So you're kind of sad and you're kind of glad.
So what's the impact on the Central Florida economy? What's it doing for Central Florida?
I think it's doing a great thing for the Central Florida economy because if you look at our employment and unemployment rates here, the unemployment rate right now is low. And the employment is also high. At some point, as the unemployment rate keeps going down, you're going to reach full employment. And I think we're almost there already, which means that everybody who wants a job has a job. So where are you going to find people? And at the same time that this is happening, you now have this influx of Puerto Ricans coming from the island who are ready, willing, and for the most part, able to fill those jobs. So it keeps the economy booming. It keeps the economy going at a time where it could slow down or come to a halt because you just don't have the people to fill the positions.
Now, you wrote on your blog, Maria Padilla, that Puerto Rican workers are labeled as a, quote, problem by some, but you disagree, obviously.
Oh, I obviously disagree. I'm referring to the historical references to the Puerto Rican population coming out of places like the Northeast and New York. You see the headlines, and on that blog, I actually had a photo of an old headline in the New York Times. Oh, we have to do something about the Puerto Rican problem. This is going to be an issue or that kind of thing. Instead of looking at it for what it really was, which is all these folks were coming to New York to fill a lot of those manufacturing jobs, for instance, in the garment industry. New York has a fashion week because it had a garment industry, which it no longer has because a lot of those jobs have gone overseas. There were reasons why people were going there. Otherwise, they would have gone elsewhere.
What kind of opportunities are here in Central Florida? You know, there's, if you look at parts of Central Florida, for example, the Space Coast, there's those kinds of high-tech jobs. But what else are Puerto Ricans coming here and getting into?
Interesting that you should mention the Space Coast because there is a very direct link between NASA on the Space Coast and the engineering school in Puerto Rico in a town called Mayagüez. They have an engineering school there, and it has become a pipeline. That was also a pipeline to the Space Coast. Lots of engineers coming out of there, very well prepared and going to NASA. I had a cousin who actually was one of them, went to NASA, and now is working for a big defense contractor somewhere up in, I believe, Washington State. People are coming here for whatever number of jobs that there are in whatever industry that they're able to get into at this point in time, because there are some things that are going to be barriers, such as language. Puerto Ricans, by and large, tend to be more bilingual than most other Latinos, but there is a limit to some degree coming from the island because the English language instruction on the island is actually quite poor.
Why is that?
The teaching of English in Puerto Rico has always been a political issue to some degree. It's entangled with the whole idea of who you are, the identity of the island, and whether Spanish will predominate or English will predominate. So depending on the political parties, you have these tug of wars about whether which language is official or isn't. And so the teaching of English has never really fully developed to a really good language program.
Is there also the sense that they can come to the mainland anytime and pick that up?
Yes, because what happens is in Puerto Rico, you are speaking Spanish all the time. And so you don't really have too much opportunity to develop that English. Now you come to Central Florida, and Central Florida is not like South Florida. In Central Florida, you do have to speak English. In South Florida, you can get away with not speaking English for quite a long time, depending on what part of the city you're in Miami-Dade or whatever. But that's not so in Central Florida. You come here and you really do have to grapple with your language skills. And so now you're in an environment where English is being spoken predominantly, and you now have to make that transition. So, yeah, it does boost bilingual skills.
When you look at the migration that's going on now, is there anything in the way of people going back to Puerto Rico? Like, what sort of opportunities are people seeing?
To go back?
Yeah.
Zilch. Right now. It's so funny you should say that, because I myself, I'm part of the return migration. As I said, there have been waves of migration in and out of Puerto Rico. And when I was in my teens, my parents decided that they wanted to go back to the island as part of the migration called the return migration. Puerto Ricans who lived in the States who now wanted to go back to the island. So that's how I first came to live in Puerto Rico as a high school student. Times were tough then. I remember the things that my parents had to go through to adjust, but they're even tougher now because talking about that $70 billion in debt, we're just talking about it now. There's been no agreement, no accord, no nothing. So what has to happen in order to either pay that down or eliminate some of it has not happened yet. The discussions are ongoing. And there's a big debt payment coming up in December, $300-odd million, I think it is. And I don't know what's going to happen there in terms of the government has already said it doesn't have the money. So are they going to eliminate jobs? Are they going to have a shortened work week? Are they going to shut down certain agencies that are non-essential? All the tough stuff that has not happened yet.
Government jobs, that are a fairly steady and reliable source of employment?
Yes. Historically, government has been a sort of an ideal place to work for some people, not all. But to the extent that you had a large proportion of workers working for the government, I think the highest may have been 28-29%. It's now much lower than that. Still in the 20s, but it's still maybe 24%, I think the number is right now. So obviously the government was seen as a place to work. But I think also on the part of government, because Puerto Rico had an overpopulation up until recently, and also because the economy is not as developed as it could be, it was also employment of last resort for the government. It was a way to keep employment figures up, unemployment figures down, and so on. And it's also a big political machine in Puerto Rico, where one party gets into power and then all their folks get into office, and then the other party loses and they're back out in the private workforce. So it's also been seen as a spoil system in the way that perhaps cities like Chicago and old New York and so used to be. So there's a lot of that going on still, but I think a lot of that is also going to come to an end now.
What about questions of statehood versus sovereignty? How do you see that resolving?
I think the debt issue has really put into sharp relief the limitations of the political power that Puerto Rico has to solve its own dilemma. It really does not have the tools to solve its own dilemma. The island does not have any kind of bankruptcy court that it can resort to, and principally because sometime back in the 80s, Congress took it away. It used to have that recourse. It doesn't have any more. Nobody can quite figure out why that happened, but it doesn't have that recourse now. So what do you do in a case like that? The fact that Puerto Rico has a non-voting member of Congress, a congressional delegate, one person for 3.5 million people right now, and how does that person get the wheels to turn and to people to think about Puerto Rico?
That's a tough job. I mean, the pressure on that delegate, right?
Yes, there's a lot of pressure on that delegate. But also what we're seeing now, which is why you're probably hearing a lot more as well, is they are resorting to the diaspora, people like me and people like anybody else who's been here for X amount of time or who have moved here even for a short period of time, because we do have power. We are all U.S. citizens, regardless of where we were born. We can all vote if we want to in the very next election, any election, actually, because we are citizens. And we can apply pressure to our own representatives to take a look at this issue and do something and help do something about it.
Do Puerto Ricans you speak to who've just made the trip from the island to the mainland United States, do they express hopes of going back to Puerto Rico at some point?
I think that's always sort of there in people's heart. To some degree, to some people it goes away. But I'll give you the example of my parents. As I said, I was in South America and Paraguay over the summer, and I went to see my dad. My dad is going on 93 years old. He still wants to go to Puerto Rico. He talks about it all the time. My mother, who lives here in Florida, she is going on 84, I believe. Mom, I'm sorry if I get this wrong. And every once in a while, she talks about it. She misses it. People miss it. And that's understandable. It's a beautiful place, beautiful beaches, very friendly people. And you're surrounded by your own culture that has to feel different to you if that's who you are. But I think there's also a practicality that's settling in with a lot of people. They say, even if I went back, what would I do? Because the economy is really in no particular shape to provide opportunities.
You're saying basically nobody knows what's going to happen with this debt situation looming in December, but can you look sort of 5 years out and say this is possibly a path that Puerto Rico might be on?
Well, the migration that we're seeing now is historic. It is even larger than the migration that my parents were a part of back in the late 40s and 50s. I see that continuing. In fact, there was a presentation here not too long ago to the diaspora. Many intellectuals came. And one of the things that stuck with me is Dr. Edwin Melendez of the Center for Puerto Rican Studies in New York talked about how the Puerto Rican population is becoming nomadic. I thought, oh my goodness, nomadic. We're moving around quite a bit. And he has information, studies, data that show that of the Puerto Ricans who live in the States, about a quarter of the Puerto Rican population, which is now larger than the island population, moved in the 10-year period between 2000 and 2011 to another state, very often to Florida. So we're becoming more nomadic, which is a little bit sad, as I mentioned earlier. But I think people are doing what they have to do. And unless in the situation in Puerto Rico, I think it's going to become worse because, as I said, they haven't really even tackled the issue yet. They're just talking around it. Mm-hmm. And once they have to really bite into it and take action, I think you're going to see a lot more, perhaps, desperation and more people leaving the island. So I don't see this halting or even slowing down anytime soon.
And for Puerto Ricans who've been in Central Florida for a long time, is there the sense of responsibility of, okay, we can do something to help what's happening on the island and we're going to do that?
Absolutely. I think there is a very great sense of responsibility and obligation to help the folks on the island. First of all, because we all understand what the political situation is, which is that there is no real political power. There are no levers that people can push up or down to really try to solve the issues. And so therefore, it really does come down to the diaspora and the pressure that the diaspora can place on their elected officials and to keep the momentum going and to keep the subject, you know, in perspective and also in the headline.
I've been speaking to Maria Padilla. She's founder and editor of Orlando Latino. It's a blog about Central Florida's Latino community. She's also former editor of La Prensa and El Sentinel. Maria, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. Still to come, the growing Puerto Rican voting bloc and what it means for politics in Central Florida. Intersection returns in a minute. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. New arrivals from Puerto Rico come from a culture with high voter turnout, but in the United States they find a dizzying array of candidates from the president down to the school board, and it can take some time to navigate the political process here. But the growing Puerto Rican population in Central Florida also wields considerable political power, and local activists are trying to mobilize those voters. Well, joining me in the studio now is Magda Yvette Torres. She's a journalist and host of An Agenda News and Talk Show. Magda, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Jimmy Torres Velez, president of the Puerto Rican Action Initiative. Thanks for joining us, Jimmy.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Jimmy, let me start with you. When you look at Puerto Rican voters in Central Florida, what are the numbers? How many are there?
Oh, the numbers are pretty close to 700,000 in Central Florida, and the number is about 1,005,000 in Florida statewide.
So walk me through what the process is of getting somebody registered to vote if they've recently moved here from the island of Puerto Rico. What do they do?
The process in Puerto Rico is a bit different from here. People are like very eager to get that ID from the Electoral Commission. And there's an office of the Electoral Commission in every single precinct in Puerto Rico. It's about 100 and some precincts. So people go there to get their ID. And, you know, when you're like 16 years old and you're going to participate in the next election, the first thing you do is you go and get that ID. For some people, it's the first ID ever. So people are like really enthusiastic about getting registered to vote. And the turnout in elections is around, in the last few years, we have lost some electorals. But it's about 80% of the people voted in the elections in Puerto Rico.
So that's a bit of a change from here. I mean, you read about the kind of will for people to vote. Even if you look at city elections in Central Florida, turnout's pretty low and there's not a huge amount of awareness. Is that something that newly arrived Puerto Ricans kind of have to grapple with?
Yes, people need to understand the process here. In Puerto Rico, there's one election every 4 years. The day of the election is a day off. It's a national holiday. And everything, all the campaigns together make the same noise, the same effort to get the people to vote. When you come here and you have like elections in August and elections in every year, at any moment there's an election happening, and people don't realize that. So that's why when you have presidential election, that is the same day, the same year of the Puerto Rico gubernatorial election, that's why you have a big turnout of Puerto Ricans, but not in midterms or other local elections.
Well, Magda Yvette Torres, host of On Agenda News Talk Show, what political issues are important to Puerto Rican voters and what are you hearing from your listeners?
Well, to tell you the truth, when they get here, the first thing that they find is when they go to get their license, driving license, they find it shocking that they say, well, would you like to register to be a voter? And they say, well, we're not aware of this. I mean, what do you want us to do? What would you like to register, Democrat or Republican? And say, they say they tend to go then in the center and nonpartisan. And they will stay that way until they learn the process. It will take them probably from 5 to 6 years for them to truly understand what's going on with the United States politics. But basically, what they tell me is that they need more information. Especially Hispanic media, especially Hispanic television, need to do more in order to get them ready and understand the process and get to know the candidates. So that's what they talk about, that they need information in order to participate. If they feel that they don't understand the process, then they will withdraw and not participate. Now, for presidential elections, they tend to go and participate because they listen more about the figure of the president than other candidates. Mm-hmm. Now, when we have legislative or midterm elections, that when they get a little bit upset because they need to know so many names, and it's very hard for them to understand that process is different. And that's what I hear from them.
As far as where they get information from, then, if at times they feel like they're not getting enough information from local media, is a candidate who's prepared to go door to door and hand out flyers and that kind of thing, are they going to have an advantage in a local election?
To me, truly, going door-to-door helps a lot. That will help the candidates if they are Hispanic or they are from here. But I think that the Hispanic media needs to do more, especially during these midterms mm-hmm. elections. That when you see that the Hispanic participation go really, really low, there's got to be more ongoing through the years of letting the people know about what is the voting process, to get to know the elected officials, to get to know the ones that are aspiring. And that is, I think, they lack information. I mean, Jimmy has done an excellent job, you know, trying to disseminate with the campaign Vote, Puerto Ricans Vote, and the group, you know, that they work with. But still, it is a movement, and the media calls them to give advice. But I think we need more information, and it's got to be an effort from the television, radio, and newspapers.
I think the process, the way they create the process and the cultural shock of people is that the election process in the United States is supposed to be for more participation and town hall meetings, that kind of thing, that we don't have that experience in Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico, the political parties are strong organizations. They really have an organization in every single town, in every single community. They have their own structures. So when you move from that very powerful political parties and you come here and then you don't see that in your community, you don't see that in your town, and actually what happened is that actually some of the political parties don't want the people to participate. They try to make us, and this is one of the mantras of our organization, is that we want to change from Puerto Ricans to be invisible to become invincible. So the problem is that we have the numbers, but if you look into the different campaigns, you don't see Puerto Ricans in the campaigns, leading campaigns. So we want to make sure that we have the candidates and we have the people that lead the campaigns in the different political parties. The other thing that works in Puerto Rico is that, as you have noticed, so Puerto Ricans are very eager to participate with music and with flags and with colors and that kind of thing that really motivate people to participate. That's why with the help of a radio icon in our community, Mac David Torres, we have created this Boricua Vota movement that really go into what people are more familiar with, which is music and actions and caravanas, which is like a parade cars. It's a motivational thing. You have to be motivated to go and vote, especially here where you don't have a day off. So in Puerto Rico, people vote close to their houses. Churches, schools, different entities are open that day for people to vote very close to their house. Here you have to jump into your car and go far away to a library to vote. The other thing that they do, and this is a funny story, is the yard signs. So for people that grew up here, yard sign is like, oh, okay, I know that an election is happening. For people see a lot of names in a yard sign and they're like, what they're doing? What is that this sign said? We don't vote for commissioner. We don't vote for school board. We don't have that experience. But as soon as we get to know the process, I can assure you that in 10 years from now, this community is going to elect a lot of people. Hopefully, we're going to have the first, for example, in Kissimmee, we're going to have the first Puerto Rican mayor. It's not something that is absurd that we have 7 people running for office in Kissimmee and you have only 5 positions. So people are eager to participate. People want to take control of the future, not just to have a Puerto Rican agenda, to have an agenda for everyone. But if we are the majority, we should be the one running for office.
Magda, talking about, you know, the role of the media, how much of your radio show is taken up with talking about politics, whether it's national or statewide or local politics?
It's the three that you mentioned. I have taken the challenge for years that I wanted to for the Hispanics, not only Puerto Ricans, all the Hispanic audience that I have, to learn the process. So every election year, especially for president, but now I'm doing it also because I've seen the weakness of the voters to me feel motivated to go and vote. I understand what Jimmy is saying, and I respect him. We backed him with his initiatives for motivating people, especially Puerto Ricans, to go out and vote. But I truly believe that it's got to be constant for them to know the candidates. We have to keep on day by day. It doesn't matter that we're in the middle of a year that it's not intermediate or the president. I keep on letting them know what's going on in Congress, what's going on in the presidency, what's going on in the Supreme Court. I just want them to learn and to know. And one of the things that I tend to do a lot a year before elections is that I bring professors from UCF or other universities for them to talk about the process, to talk about the Electoral College, talk about the different elections that we hold that are counties, that it's the state, that are the cities, and then national. I do it 365 days a year. I have to do it.
It is true. And she goes and she tried to explain the Board of Education to people. And then people call, because that's not the experience from people that are coming to this country from other places. And then we explain what is the Board of Education, what is the decision that they make at the Board of Education. So it's important for the voters to have a voice in that Board of Education, because these are the people that make decisions about their kids. The same with the county commission. So people don't have that experience in Puerto Rico. So the mayors are the ones that make the decisions, not the aldermen, not the assemblymen people. By voting and participating is an opportunity to increase the capacity of the schools and the counties that they live and the family live.
Magda, are your listeners hungry for this kind of, you know, nitty-gritty detail about these, you know, Board of Education elections or, you know, local school board, these kinds of things?
Let me tell you something, my experience at the beginning of the show, because I started an agenda back in Puerto Rico and I started here very early in the morning. I started having the show at 6 o'clock in the morning until 7 and 5 days a week. I have now a three-hour show from 1 to 4. And at the beginning, I faced some kind of a resistance from the audience. They wanted me to play music instead of talking about political issues and history and other issues, you know, that pertain to all the citizens, not only them, Hispanics or Puerto Ricans, I mean, to all the citizens of the United States and that can vote. And so it got me like probably like 3 years to get the audience interested in politics. And truly, I have an audience that is eager and hungry to get this type of subjects and to discuss and to get to know what's happening.
So you've taught them to eat their greens.
Oh, yes. All the time. I mean, my program is basically politics, international politics, national and local.
What do you make of this presidential election cycle? We've still got a year to go. It's been pretty involved already. What are your listeners telling you about what they're hearing from the Democratic candidates for the primary, the GOP candidates?
Well, I call my audience the analysts. It is because I have people in my audience that are really and truly analysts. I mean, they're getting so hooked and so involved in the elections process. Every time that we have to see a debate, presidential debate, Republican or Democratic, I mean, I open the mic, I open the telephones, and you should listen to them analyzing everything that have been going through or that went through the debates. And I am impressed the way they are getting the inputs of the candidates, and they're getting to be more knowledgeable. That makes me feel very, very happy. I'm so pleased to listen to an audience that it's getting more mature in the political process, and they have gotten deeper into the process.
So they're political junkies now.
Well, I call them the analysts because they have, and they appreciate everything I give them every day as news that they need to know.
Do you get the sense, Magda Yvette Torres, that politicians are getting clued into the potential power of the Puerto Rican voting community in Central Florida?
This I'm going to say. If they want the Hispanics and the Puerto Ricans to vote, they have to reach out to them. They cannot wait to the last moment to come to a radio station and give a couple of interviews. They should be reaching out to that Hispanic community, and they should do it by town hall meetings. They should do it by different activities, going out on interviews, and reach out. Sometimes there's something that I really don't like to see in the elections. I don't like to see them at the very last moment joining a stage and trying to dance salsa or merengue just to show, hey, here I am and I like you guys because you dance salsa and merengue. No, I don't like that. I like them to reach out to the people and talk to them, but, you know, with months in advance, not wait to the last moment, because they are not going to remember their names.
When we created the Puerto Rican Action Initiative, and the word action was like really clearly part of the name, because we want to see actions. Actions speak louder than words. And we have our issues. We want them to take care of our issues, to talk about our issues, to help us getting good deals from the airline industry. So if it's something that it has to be done to make sure that it's easier for our people to go back and forth to Puerto Rico, that will help our economy. So if the people come here and they have to face that they have to pay more for insurance than the other people because they don't have the experience of insurance in Puerto Rico, that's the kind of actions that we want to see from candidates. We want to see actions in terms of the people that are working in their campaign. So we are Latinos. Some people call it Hispanic. We are Latino. We're Hispanic. But at the same time, we are the majority here. We are Puerto Ricans are the majority in Central Florida. So why want to create a campaign and bring somebody from New Mexico to be the chairman of your campaign when we have plenty of Puerto Ricans here with the education, with experience that can run the campaigns? So the problem is that when then the candidate here, oh, this is the issue that you have to talk, then they will talk about immigration because there's 30 million other people that are impacted by immigration. But we want to talk about housing. We have people living in motels rooms in Kissimmee because they don't have access to banks to give them money to get the rents. Mm-hmm. They cannot buy houses, etc. So that's the kind of thing that we want to do, and not only talk about the subject of the month. We're not the flavor of the month. We're here. As soon as we got here, we can vote. So why don't you get our issues first?
Another thing that I think about this particular moment in the history of the United States is not only the minorities are going through a lot of hazards. I mean, it has become a major national situation for the middle class and down, where I put not only the Hispanics, but also the African Americans and some other minorities. So when you see the overall of the situation of the United States right now, now you see a middle class that is struggling. And we're talking about whites, Hispanics, African Americans, and other minorities. I mean, it's a big, big, big number of Americans that are going through the same thing. So the needs of the community have blended with the needs of the Hispanics and the African Americans, and even now the whites are going through the same problems.
That middle class cannot win without the inclusion and the participation of the Latino community, especially Puerto Ricans here. So the good news is that we're talking to the African American community. We can help each other. We should help each other. This is the way that we're going to protect that middle class that MacDivette mentioned, is for us to win. The middle class cannot win without the vote of the Puerto Rican community. And we cannot win without the support of their community to us. So I think that crisis is always bringing opportunities. I think this is a great opportunity for us to start talking to each other, building relationship, and get to understand each other.
Jimmy Torres-Velez is president of the Puerto Rican Action Initiative. Jimmy, thank you so much for
coming. Thank you very much for the invitation.
And we're also speaking to Magda Yvette Torres. She's a journalist and host of An Agenda News Talk Show. Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. The executive producer is Catherine Welch. Tune in again on Friday morning at 9 for a roundup of the stories of the week. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.